Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
I'm doing a series. I'm doing a postscript, really, of a series that I've decided to discontinue. So I'll quit saying that, I guess, that I'm doing a postscript. But originally I was speaking concerning several current events that were taking place several months ago, but some of these are, you know, continuing to happen. I mean, various things are piggybacking on these events and are similar events, etc. So all in all, I want to continue to report on these things as I have a series that I've entitled One World Religion, One World Government, and One World in Deception. You know, before the Antichrist comes, I do believe that there will be a foundation that's laid by human beings. Before the great anarchy, the great falling away, the apostasy in the church, and the total anarchy of society towards God. Of course, there is an anarchy towards God in all of us before we know Christ. But we're building up, according to my understanding of Scripture, of course, to this time of great anarchy when the world will accept a false Messiah. He has many names, the Antichrist, the Beast, etc. But he will come, to many people, he will appear to be this comforting, loving, caring individual. But, of course, God looks upon the heart, and his reference to this individual is the Beast. And he'll have a co-partner in crime as well. But I think the foundation will be partially laid by human beings who are also in rebellion against God and God's revealed will in his word and God's ways. And so there is this attempt throughout history. There was at Genesis 11, we read about the Tower of Babel, the attempts of mankind to create basically a globalistic culture and a society on the world, a one world government. And God, he stopped that. And we know that in the book of Revelation, that there will be a temporary one-world government and a one-world religion. Revelation 17 talks about that. And so I'm addressing some of those building blocks and some of the movers and shakers in our own time that are helping, I believe, to help bring that about, to bring that foundation for when the Antichrist comes. He's going to come with all lying signs and wonders through the power of Satan to deceive. So, it will take more than just mankind's efforts to create this one world government or one world religion. But there is I believe, a foundation being laid. So anyway, enough said about that. But that is where we're at. I'm looking at various current events taking place, and we have been looking at the Parliament of World Religions. Down the road, we will look again at another one of their updates or another one of their articles, which I retrieved, but that won't be for, that will be a few podcasts down the road. In the meantime, we've been looking at, I just looked at different groups that have partnered together with the Department of World Religions who have the same goal in mind of helping, you know, unbeknownst perhaps to them, of helping to bring a one world religion. They claim they just want to get along with each other and all that, but they're, of course, very rejective of the gospel of Jesus Christ and biblical Christians, and want to partner together with everyone who say any path will lead you to God type of thing. So anyway, we looked at the Temple of Understanding. We looked at the United Religions Initiative, the World Peace Prayer Society. And then, of course, I, in passing, mentioned the United Methodist Church, which, you know, that should send up some red lights and banners, signals, flags, whatever. Of course, as they claim to be a Christian group, and we know there are many liberal groups that claim to be Christian that are obviously not. They're anti-Christian because they don't believe God's word and they don't practice what God's tells us to practice. But anyway, we've looked at those groups, and so I mentioned another group, and I got my foot in the door last week, as we mentioned, the founder of that group, named Sir Francis Younghusband. He founded the World Congress of Faiths. And I read from page 119 from the book The Spirit of One Earth, Reflections on Teilhard de Chardin and Global Spirituality by Ursula King, which was written, I believe, in 1999. So it's 20 years old, but still relevant. And also had its roots in the original Parliament of World Religions way back in, I believe it was 1893. But I don't know what their connection is now. I don't know if there's a falling out. I really haven't gone into a lot of research because I just discovered this group recently when I found this book. And I thought it was worthwhile for you to know about them and their efforts because they are still out there doing what they do. And I went to their website and got some information, and which is where I'm going now, to share a little bit more about them, as I think you would find it interesting as they do their thing to try to help bring world peace and help bring religions together, etc. Anyway, from their website, this is the World Congress of Faith, Our History, and this is from their own site. And then I will go to another site for another article. But it says here, our history. The WCF, the World Congress of Faith, has been leading the way in building a community of individuals who want to create and enjoy the benefits of interfaith dialogue since 1936. Like I said, I think they were influenced somewhat by the Parliament of World Religions, but they themselves came about since 1936. In the early days, its slogan was "Faith meeting faith, a rich resource for life," and this still holds true. But you see that they want to create and enjoy the benefits of interfaith dialogue, and I bring that term up, interfaith, often, as the ecumenical movement usually pertains to biblical Christians, the ecumenical movement usually pertains to professing Christian groups. The interfaith movement usually pertains to so-called Christian groups aligning with non-Christian groups. But I'll get into that a little bit more too, as I found an interesting take on that when you get into these terminologies. And you know, different people use different terms different ways, so I thought it would be worthwhile for me to mention that as well. But going on in the article, it says, the organization has its roots, there we go, in the Parliament of World Religions, first held in Chicago in 1893, and the Religions of Empire Conference, held in London in 1924. There's another one I had never heard of. Inspired by these movements and his own spiritual experiences, explorer Sir Francis Younghusband, once described as the last great imperial adventurer, organized two international conferences in London, and after the second of these, in the shadow of a looming world war, WCF became established as an independent body. Excuse me. Okay, remarkable for attracting a galaxy of distinguished speakers from around the world and from all the main faiths, many of the papers emanating from it were groundbreaking and remain of great interest today. Some people claim that their faiths must be accepted by the whole of mankind, while by contrast, the paper prepared by Professor Haldane, who had died shortly before the conference, included this passage. Many Christians entertain the ideal of converting non-Christian peoples to Christianity. Well, yeah, duh, that's what Jesus told us to do, or convert us to him, not so much Christianity, but to salvation, through Christ to God. I think that a much higher ideal is to understand and enter into a sympathy with the religions which exist in other countries, and to use this understanding and sympathy as a basis for higher religion, you know, whatever that is. Well, that higher religion, I'm afraid, is going to evolve into Mystery Babylon, the Great Harlot. But anyway, moving on to the article in what is known as the Interfaith Observer concerning the World Congress of Faiths, an overview. This article is by Marcus Braybook, and the subtitle is Nudging Religions Toward Inclusiveness. We hear that term a lot, don't we? Let me get something straightened out here. Okay. Now, the article goes on to say, studying the history of the interfaith movement, one finds an indirect link from the 1893 World Parliament of Religions to the World Congress of Faiths In 1933, the World Fellowship of Faiths held an international congress in Chicago. It was also called a Second Parliament of Religions. One of those who attended was Francis Younghusband. Now, I want to stop in that article right now and move to another article, and then we'll come back to this. But this is where I mentioned how different people use the term interfaith and ecumenical, etc. And I just thought it was a kind of an interesting comment that I wanted to make. This is from Wikipedia. Interfaith dialogue. Interfaith dialogue refers to cooperative, constructive, and positive interaction between people of different religious traditions, that is, faiths, and or spiritual or humanistic beliefs at both the individual and institutional levels. The article goes on, the Archdiocese of Chicago's Office for Ecumenical and Interreligious Affairs defines the difference between ecumenical, interfaith, and interreligious relations as follows. Now, this is how they define it, okay? This isn't, you know, I don't necessarily go along with this, but I just want to share this. Ecumenical as relations and prayer with other Christians. Interfaith as relations and members of the Abrahamic faiths, that is, Jewish and Muslim traditions. And interreligious as relations with other religions such as Hinduism and Buddhism. I prefer to use interfaith, you know, to refer to any of these groups that claim to be Christian that are working together with non-Christian religions, okay? But anyway, the article goes on to say, and I'll spare you a lot of this. I'll cut right to the chase here. It says, to some, the term interreligious dialogue has the same meaning as the interfaith dialogue. Neither are the same as non-denominational Christianity. The World Council of Churches, which of course is the very liberal, what I would call no council of churches at all, the World Council of Churches distinguishes between interfaith and interreligious. To the WCC, interreligious refers to action between different Christian denominations, so interfaith refers to interaction between different faith groups such as Muslim and Christian or Jew, for example. So anyway, for what it's worth, I had wanted to share that with you and then move on back to the article that I was quoting from about the World Congress of Faiths. And this is from the Interfaith Observer. And so we want to, forgive me, I want to go back to that page. Younghusband, that's an odd name, is it not? Younghusband was encouraged by the organizers to arrange a second World Fellowship of Faiths Congress in London, although Younghusband soon made clear that he was in charge of plans for what became known as the World Congress of Faiths. Just as the then Archbishop of Canterbury refused to support the 1893 World Parliament of Religions, so in 1936 Archbishop Cosmo Lang advised King Edward the Eighth not to preside at the World Congress of Faiths because Christianity was the only true religion. Most of those who attended the Congress were scholars such as Sarvapalli Radhakrishnan, Yusuf Ali, and D.T. Suzuki, who I recognize his name. I believe he was a Zen Buddhist. It says religious leaders wanted to hold on to their followers. Inspired by a sense of oneness that transcends particular religions and inspires active service of others, members of World Congress of Faiths, or WCF, I'll just continue to use the acronym, have continued to be gadflies, urging faith communities to come together to be more adventurous and socially concerned. Overcoming exclusivism. Pioneers such as Bishop Bell, who is a friend of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, Ninian Smart, Geoffrey Perrender, George Appleton, and John Hick, all members of the World Congress of Faiths, encourage Christians to risk an inclusive attitude even if pluralism was still too dangerous. WCF members who belonged to other religions were also challenging the exclusivism of their traditions. WCF's first and continuing task has been to reduce the ignorance and prejudice with which people viewed other faiths. As late as the 60s, Archbishop of Canterbury Ramsay visited a Hindu temple for the first time, and no one had advised him to take off his shoes. For the 1950s, WCF campaigned for children to be taught about all religions, not just Christianity, a change that eventually happened in the 80s. That's sad. Anyway, as late as 1980, the religious... that's sad in my opinion. The only reason I would want to know about other religions is so I might know better how to reach them with the truth of Jesus Christ. As late as 1980, the religious affairs correspondent of the Times said that church leaders knew nothing about other faith communities, although WCF had ensured there were friendly relations between them. But by the mid-80s, change was on its way. Hindus, Muslims, and Sikhs were building their own religious centers. By the 90s, the ending of the Cold War and hopes for the new millennium created a mood of optimism. With growing trust, faith communities began to cooperate in prayer and work for peace and in defense of human rights. Indeed, on January 3rd, in a moving ceremony at the Palace of Westminster with royalty and the Prime Minister Tony Blair present, leaders of faith communities committed themselves. From what I recall, Tony Blair was, I believe he was Catholic, I'm not sure, but also very New Age oriented. And of course, he was the former Prime Minister of England. All too soon, hopes for a new millennium were shattered by 9/11 and other acts of violence. Interfaith activists had to struggle to prevent the war against terror becoming a new crusade. Why? You know, well, anyway, the dangers have led to greater support for interfaith work by many governments and by the United Nations. I mean, it's so sad that people are so naive that when there is a real threat, a real and present danger, like terrorism, which is what Islam, you know, has been founded on and still works with, that as though there's something wrong to have a war against terror. I mean, it's so naive, so sad. Anyway, at least naive on some people's parts, perhaps on others, it's designed, and they know exactly what they're doing. Representing yourself and not your faith. Because members of the World Congress of Faiths join on an individual basis, not as representatives of a religion, WCF has been able to pioneer and take risks. It has welcomed members of minority groups and seekers, as well as the major faiths. Today, dialogue between those who call themselves spiritual and committed members of a faith community is becoming more significant. And there's that thing about calling themselves spiritual. And I get so tired of hearing that. You know, I'm not spiritual, you know, or I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual, you know. Well, as I often try to remind people, the devil is a spirit, the demons are spirits, and false religions are spiritual. Doctrines of demons, they will bring you to a false spirituality. Anyway, although British-based, and that's where the WCF is based in Britain, has strong links with other international interfaith organizations and took the initiative in convening meetings in 1985 and 1988, which led them to jointly observing the centenary of the 1893 Parliament as a year of interreligious understanding cooperation, the journal Interreligious Insight, is that the word? Interreligious Insight has an international readership, and WCF has arranged interfaith tours to many countries. You know, maybe the reason why this group didn't just recently partner with the Parliament of World Religions as the others that I mentioned is maybe they have partnered with them for a long time. I really don't know. I didn't look that deep into their history. But anyway, just reading that makes me think that may be the case. It's led them, the convening meetings, which led to them jointly observing the centenary of the 1893 Parliament. You know, so I don't think there's animosity between them. I don't get that. And they're probably partnering and have been for some time, I would guess. Anyway, WCF has still to remind people that despite the practical benefits of interfaith activity, the primary motivation is spiritual and springs from an experience of oneness with the source, capital S, of all, capital A, life, capital L. In other words, God, you know, or how they perceive God. Their motivation, the primary motivation, spiritual, springs from an experience of oneness with the source of all life, which transcends particular religions and is the deepest wellspring of compassion and the commitment to human rights, peace-building, nonviolence, and reverence for all life. Well, that sounds good, but what could possibly go wrong when people want to transcend these particular religions and all become one with the source of all life. You know, that's the title they're giving God Almighty. I don't remember him ever calling himself the source of all life. I do know he is the eternal creator, and I do know that he will be the eternal ruler. But anyway, you have to pray for these people, and you have to try to understand where they're coming from, which we're trying to do. But we see and we know what the future holds with many misguided people along these lines. Now, to move on, I'm looking at my time here. I'm going to put my foot in the door. I want to go back to the other information, the other book I mentioned, The Spirit of One Earth by Ursula King. And I wanted to, since I got my foot in the door there, talking about the World Congress of Faith, which I read about in that book and I'd never heard of before, I want to speak a little bit more to what is said in that book, because Teilhard de Chardin, of course, is a real seminal figure among New Agers and holds a lot of clout and a lot of weight in a lot of people's eyes. So I want to just comment some from the chapter 7 of that book, and I don't know how much time I will have, if I'll get through that or not, but I want to go back to that now, and this is still really under the topic of one world religions, and the one world religion. So I think it's fair to go there and comment a little bit more. Though the book is 20 years old, still very interesting to see what was going on and what is going on, and how Teilhard de Chardin still influences people. Enough, of course, for this woman to write a book. There's been several books written by other authors about Teilhard de Chardin. Pierre is his first name, by the way. He's French. Anyway, let us consider, on page 120, it says, let us consider how the world faiths relate to convergence by asking three questions. What does convergence imply, and does it exist in the contemporary world? If a movement of convergence exists, how does it affect the world religions? And three, what contribution can the world faiths make towards the convergence of humankind? And you know, that's an interesting word, convergence. I believe that's a word we've been hearing quite a bit, those of us who follow Bible prophecy, that there is a convergence of activities in the world, and actually that's what I'm commenting on as we look at some of these events that are taking place. But they're using the term a little differently here, and these are the three questions that are asked in this chapter. And so let's look at some of the comments that I found interesting concerning the first question, what does convergence imply? We shall begin with the question, what is meant by convergence? To converge initially means to draw or come together at the simplest level, it is said, of lines which tend to meet at one point. Yet, when one speaks of the possible convergence of humankind or the convergence of religions, one is not thinking of something linear, and straightforward like a geometrical projection. Rather, convergence is to be thought of as a multidimensional, complex process operating at many different levels. It is not unity in the sense of uniformity, but it implies a complex network of relationships among different parts. Convergence, in this sense, means the search for or the movement towards a common meeting point through which we can interrelate and create a unity that transcends our diverse particularities. Okay, next page. Movements towards greater unification are at work in many fields of human endeavor, including the area of world religions. Well, of course, we see that in the Parliament of World Religions, which just met in 2018, who we've been talking about. Never before in human history have so many believed in the oneness of humankind, a oneness pertaining to people's common origin, shared development, and a unity of purpose. There's a growing consciousness of a converging world, of a movement toward a real and realizable unity. But will the dream come true? Will there ultimately be greater unity and integration, or will humankind develop towards more irreconcilable states of division? Both possibilities are open at present. Which road we choose will depend on us. The future of humankind, whether united or divided, will be our responsibility and our creation. Well, and that's where I say, you know, there are building blocks, And there is a foundation being built by people who do believe that they're the ones that are going to have to, that, you know, the road is that is chosen will depend on we mortals, we human beings. The idea of convergence presents a goal of unity. I'm sorry. The idea of convergence presents a goal of unity, for it will not come about automatically. No, the people are working towards it, but the Antichrist will come in and seal it up for everyone for a season. Convergence is by no means an inevitable process, but an ideal to be chosen or to be rejected, as the case may be. Convergence will come about if we foster its development. At the moment, we can already discern a certain amount of cultural convergence in the areas of science and technology and the global network of communications. Let us ask what effect such developments have on the situation of the world religions, and then examine the idea of a possible convergence of religions. All right, that will probably be a good time for me to close shop for the day. I have less than 2 minutes left, and I don't believe I'm going to be able to make it through the rest of this chapter. So we will continue to look at the building blocks and the foundation being laid for the coming one world religion and the coming one world government.